Thank you. Good afternoon. Funziona? And good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for being here. I am Paolo Mastandrea, University Ca' Foscari of Venice, and this is Neil Caffey, University of New York State, Buffalo. Our area of interest as teachers and as researchers is computer-aided Latin philology. It may seem a paradox, but the disciplines studying Greek and Roman cultures opened the way to avant-garde practices in the field of the digital treatment and analysis of texts. The reasons of this trend, often neglected, are manifest. The versatility of philology, whose origins coincide with the Alexandrine exegesis of Homer, and which was improved by the collective effort of Greek and Roman lexicographers, and thanks to the biblical concordances of Hugo of St. Cher, beginning of the 13th century here in Paris, in modern times developed sophisticated printed tools ready to be digitalized. This happened only around 1985, when the first personal computers were launched into the market. A specific characteristic of classical Idest Greco-Latin literatures is that the organization of texts within historical concluded corpora, and as such retrievable almost in their entirety, even though it is inaccurate to speak of entirety when considering the precariousness of textual transmission and the remarkable role played by choice and the chance in it. It is well known that the Western literary system, see Homer onwards, is characterized by a strong tendency to conscious emulation, systematic imitation, and any occasional or less conscious withdrawal. The so-called intertextuality has been largely examined and theoretically established, but can be perceived better and with a stronger grade of scientific certainty if the investigation is conducted on electronic thesauri of considerable dimension, as that which will be constituted thanks to the Tessere Museive project. Ancient authors and their legacy should be read beyond the well-tested formats represented by the critical editions of well-reputed academic series, Bibliotheca Teubneriana, Oxford Classical Texts, Collection Bude, Monumenta Germania Historica, Corpus Scriptorum Ecclesiasticorum Latinorum, and so on. They should be experienced through the format distributed via CD-ROM digital corpora, at this point residual, and especially via the web. The latter option does certainly not aim to contradict the former, neither does it promote innovation for its own sake. Rather, it aims to foster autonomous researches focusing on stylistic and linguistic studies to be accomplished through media which are incomparably more rapid and reliable than any other repertoire so far available on printed paper, lexica, indexes, concordancy. The current techniques of word retrieval have outclassed any previous search tool concerning words or lexical patterns. They offer a unique extent of the field onto which textual queries can be operated, thousands of authors and texts at once. They allow an extreme refinement of the investigation when searching for delimited word segments or for one or more composition elements or even for verbal segment of nexuses sequenced or at a short distance or for specific and peculiar position of single words within a verse or a prose period and so on. Many of these possibilities are already available thanks to the existing tools. The poets, however, are not just sensitive to morphemes and phrases, semantics and rhetorical imagination. They perceive rhythms and the phonic and the metric recurrences and the correspondences, all apparently neutral elements, but these very elements deserve accurate analysis, which may offer surprising results and even more significant when comprehended within a larger scale as that allowed by the Tessere Museve project. In the Greco-Latin antiquity and up to the edge of the Middle Ages, poetry was personally read or listened to through readings and performed aloud in the household or in public spaces dedicated to such purpose, auditoria, small theaters, etc. Nowadays, we tend to overlook the consequences of this practice, which is attested by our sources undoubtedly. The main advantage of a lexical research conducted on an electronic digitized text is the possibility, nowadays universally recognized, to immensely extend the criteria of survey concerning written words without the limits typical of the instruments or on printed paper of the pre-computer era. Subjectivity is therefore reduced as well as critical preconception in favor of a much better and less secure intuition of intertextual relations. A few more words for explain what we intend for intertextuality. That is not the comparison between isolated and inactive objects that the researchers often do to show off their ability, something like did one century ago the Quellenforschung, which revealed a certain scholarly pedantry and produced a lot of lists of locisimiles. This kind of intertextuality usually concerns with the classical author from whom all other writers derived. What we intend for intertextuality is instead a study that gives the same importance to all the texts using a philological as well as historical approach. Every text tells of reciprocal intellectual relations between literary authors that happened throughout the centuries, contributing to reconstruct the cultural panorama of a certain period of time. Let's go now to our slides where we can offer an explanation of what this project signifies. You see Tessere Museve. This is the team, all these five are here today. Musisque de oque and tessere. It's an Italian-American team, as you see. What's the meaning of Tessere Museve? Tessere is tessere abusive means mosaic tiles. These tiles form the wider mosaic of texts. As you will get from my words, as well as Neil's ones, our approaches to classical intertextuality are slightly different. What is sure is that this transatlantic project is a great opportunity for us. MQDQ plus tessera. MQDQ is an acronym for Musisque Deoque, two words and six syllables, meaning offered to the muses and to God. Musisque Deoque. The God was Apollo in ancient times, the God of the Christians in the Middle Ages and modern centuries. MQDQ is a large archive of Latin poetry from the beginnings of Latin literature are fixed in 240 before Christ. Latin literature begins with a translation of Odyssea by Livius Andronicus. And the archive goes until the 7th, 8th century, the so-called Dark Ages. Tesserae works with a big corpus of Perseus database, poetry and prose texts. The server of Tessere Musive is housed in Venice. This is the homepage of Musisque Deoque, and this is the homepage of Tessere. Some preliminary thoughts. Philologists or computer scientists? It is sure that your speaker now, as so Neil Caffi and Martina Venuti, are Latin philologists. But maybe James Gowley, and Daniele Silvi would rather identify themselves as computer scientists, or better, digital humanists. What is a digital humanist? Silvi gives this definition. She dice, would this, the digital humanist, would this with text structure and digitize it, analyzing and mapping the characteristics of a content in both aspects of a text, the content in its logic and chronologic connections, and the document, material, physical form, and specific instance. You have then a suite of sentences. If I cannot find a text or anything else on the web, it does not actually exist. We know that it is not true. Not all that, we can find actually exists in the web. Good search practice and the new tools. Tradition meets innovation, the benefits of it. This is true. The selection of data and their elaboration, a list of logic similes, is not a commentary. It is true. the research result from a database is the starting point, not the end of the job. It is true. All in this room know that the answer, but it is not common that everyone in our academic rooms answer as we answer. It goes without saying that a digital edition can provide of a text much more information than a printed version of the same text. We have a lot of classical text archives. Our challenge is, beginning for our two projects, to make the texts work together. Our policy, Savasandir, is to allow at everyone in the world free access. The next two or three slides deal with more technical aspects of the work, and at this point I will let Neil Caffey speak.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Paolo. I want to start my own remarks by thanking FMSH and the Mellon Foundation for this opportunity. We had a wonderful transatlantic alliance here between Buffalo and Venice, between MQDQ and Tesserae, and it's been a real pleasure working with Paolo and the rest of his team. So thank you for that opportunity. I want to build now on some of Paolo's remarks. MQDQ and Tesserae, as one of the previous slides said, are two leading projects in the world of classical digital intertextuality. And I think one way to look at the way we look at intertextuality is, first of all, classicists often tend to be concerned with intertextuality at a relatively small, what others might consider a relatively small level, so allusion and fine correspondences between texts. Not that we're not concerned with larger ones, but I think our initial focus is smaller than, say, some of the other projects that we've heard from in yesterday and today. Each of our projects preexisted this particular, that's to say, Tesserae and MQDQ. Obviously, we had our own histories and work that had been done first, so it might be worth just saying something a little bit about each project separately, showing you our separate websites, and then we can come to what it is that we decided to collaborate on, and then what the results of that collaboration were. So if we jump off the PowerPoint here for a minute, and off into the wilds, that's the wrong slide, but we'll come here. Let me just show you briefly, and Paolo can obviously speak more to this than I can, but to the MQDQ website. This is the existing MQDQ website, which has a number of strengths to it and resources. So first of all, as you can see, there's a whole database of Italian poetry and Latin. Paolo hasn't said much about that, but one large part of the MQDQ effort was basically just to get all these texts up in a way that's not the same as, say, Perseus has. His Italian team has had the ability not just to take legacy texts from Perseus or somewhere else, but actually to edit those texts themselves. So these are, a lot of them are actually new editions that have been curated by his team, which makes for an even richer and more extensive database of texts than you can find anywhere else in the case of Latin poetry. Oops, that page is not loading. Let's see, let me make sure I still have my internet connection. Sorry? I gotta make sure I still have an internet connection. I think I do. And let's take a quick look of just briefly on some of the other things that MQD contains. There's a whole very amazing tool here, which again, oh here, that loads. Okay, which allows you to search Latin poetry metrically. So if you wanna just put in a metrical pattern, no words, nothing else, just say, I want long, short, short, long, you can find that. And you find every instance in Latin poetry of long, short, long, or whatever you like. So it's a very powerful tool for a metrical search, which is included in some of the other work that they do. Let me continue on just briefly about MQDQ. Did that hop me out to a new page? I guess it did. Then we have the Hellenica's new section of Greek texts that you're starting to incorporate.
Not a big corpus.
Not a big corpus yet, but it's
we have so much, but it's a different approach to the test, and different is the searching an engine.
Right. So it's an initial effort to extend MQDQ into the Greek world, finally, the correspondence section of the is up here somewhere, right?
Try another time with Poeti d'Italia.
Okay, Poeti d'Italia. Here we go. I'm getting there. Sorry, I missed it. I'm getting there.
No.
Oops, wrong one. It's hard to turn around and do this. There we go.
That one.
Okay, now here we have their work on.
Yes, thank you.
I got to find the right buttons. Yes. Sorry, this isn't my site, so I'm a little.
I ask you to, for Wood does know this archive. Please go to the archive and find a lot of tests that are not at the dispositions. Many times we transferred the tests from thesis digitalized in ancient way by typewriter, and we have no printed edition at all of these tests, but we transferred a lot of tests of Italian origin between the birth of Dante and the end of the 16th century. We have more than half a million of verses, and if you can show the list of the. Yes, but it's very easy to go there.
This is Italian Latin poetry.
Yes. Yes. And when our projects will be completed, it will be possible to make a query on a wide, very, very wide corpus from the origins of Western literature, from Homer to the modern age. We have some tests of 17th century. You know, there is a lot of translations in Latin of Dante in Latin hexameters, and there were 20 or more printed editions of this of the translation of Carlo d'Aquino. It was a Jesuit, the beginning of the 18th century, who couldn't print his edition in Rome because it was forbidden to print the Divine Comedy until the end of the 18th century in Rome. And he was compelled to print his edition in Naples. Well, there is a lot of tests, and who works in the field of literature, also modern literature, can test our. Our archives.
Excellent. No, excellent. So again, just on the theme of, you know, where do we come from and where did we get to? So where we came from, piece number one was the MQDQ website that I just showed you and all the work that's been done there by Paolo and his team. Piece number two is the Tesserae work that we've been doing for 10 years now. And this is the Tesserae website that allows you to search Latin and Greek intertextually. And our search dynamics are a little different from MQDQ search dynamics. MQDQ, when you get your results, I'll show you a little more in a minute, you tend to get a line and then everything else that is related to that line, all the other language. Our search tends to, you compare whole text to whole text, and you get many, many results from whole work to whole work by given to you by order of, you know, how important we think they might be. So this is just a basic Latin search and tesserae. Let's hope this works. Live demo. Okay, so you actually, I should go back and show you what I did. So you choose your source text, author, Latin author, Latin text, Latin author, Latin text, and you want to compare the two. As long as you, for this crowd, I'll go into the advanced stuff. So you can choose to search by line or by phrase. So we chunk our texts by units. The units we use are, we don't have the moving kind of windows that some other folks have used. We actually chunk our text by poetic line or phrase. Then you can search by different features, whether you want it to match on an exact word, lemma. Semantic matching, we use a dictionary, essentially a Latin-Latin dictionary that's developed with a pivot method through an English dictionary to say this word is similar in meaning to that word. Sound matching we do based on character trigrams, so three-letter sequences we count as sounds. So you can choose one of those features to match on. I'll go with lemma for now. And then various other features, I won't go into maybe everything, all the details here. And you get your results, and so you can see a list of matching phrases across these two particular texts. It happens to be Catullus and Virgil's Georgics. In this case, matched by lemma. If we go through here, we can see what happens if we get results matched by, let me see, the first one is, this is actually matched by meaning. So this won't mean too much. Well, I'll explain the Latin a little bit, but if you can see here in this first example, the top one says turbine negro, turbine negro, negro turbine. This is an exact word match, but iactatis and eruerent are both words in Latin that have something to do with upheaval, throwing over or something like that. So that's an example of the semantic matching. It's not actually matching by lemma, it's matching by the meaning of the words. They have common meanings. And I can explain how that works more if we want to in the Q&A. We also have that sound matching I mentioned before. So for example, spectata and expectata match because, well, they have a lot of sounds in common. They're almost the same word. And you can see the same is true in the next example. Try to find a clear one here. For example, here in the third example, incertis mensibus, price certim quibus. They obviously aren't lemma matches, but they have a lot of sound features in common, which again, for us, are just three-letter sequences for this point. So this is some introduction to the Tesserae site. We do the same thing in Greek that we do in Latin. Homer and Apollonius, for example. Let's see if this one works. They're kind of long, sorry. So I had to pick the epic texts rather than the lyric stuff. I should have gone with lyric. Let's not wait for that. Trust me that the Greek should work. And let's see, what else should we say from Tesserae? We also have a cross, using that same dictionary method, we have a, let me see, let's go back here. We have a Greek-Latin possibility where you can search using that same semantic search method across Greek and Latin. So if you want to find parallels between Virgil and Homer, even though Virgil's in Latin and Homer is in Greek, you can begin to do that. So those are the sort of starting points. Those are the two projects before we started, to some degree, working together. So now the question is, okay, well, what did we actually do? So let me go back to the PowerPoint for a minute and talk about what we decided to do is because we both had these projects. They were doing similar things, why not work together? And this grant was an opportunity to do that. And the question was, what could we do? And we set out a couple of main goals. One goal was to create a common tool that did a search that combined our methods of searching, which are a little bit different, and see if we could make that work. The second major goal was to make this a model, hopefully for ourselves and everybody, of the ability to use a tool by the community. So, for that purpose, we developed an API. And then finally, we had a third goal of developing a digital definition of an intertextual object. So I'll go through what each of those are here as we proceed. Let's see. And so what is intertextuality? We talked about this already. This is a classicist perspective. You can see the granularity of the difference between the Virgil and or the similarities between Virgil and Ovid passage. Those are the kinds of similarities we look for. I'll proceed since we probably know and we can come back to that. So these are the MQDQ and Tesseract capabilities before separately. What language features do we search? MQDQ, lemma and word order, Tesseract, exact word, lemma, semantics, and sound, as you just saw. The unit of search MQDQ uses is a kind of word window, or say moving window of a certain number of words to match against the other texts. Tesseract uses a sentence or poetic line as its unit, and the corpus for MQDQ was Latin poetry, and Tesseract Greek and Latin prose and poetry. So here's the TM website that we created. It looks a little bit suspiciously like the Tesseract one, but we spent a little more time on the back end than the front end. But it does actually very different things under the hood. What it does is search for, in one way or another, we have ability to do all of those kinds of searches that we saw from both sites, right? Lemma, exact word, semantics, sound, and word order we incorporate. The unit of search, it's not exactly what it shows here, word window, sentence, or poetic line, but it's a combination, it's a kind of hybrid approach to what the unit will be. I'll talk about it in a minute. And then the corpus searched is a combination of what, we're actually just focusing in this project on Latin. The corpus search is a combination of the Latin prose from Perseus, and then we replaced the Latin poetry from Perseus that we had with the superior MQDQ poetry. So we've created a kind of hybrid corpus for Latin search that gives us more interesting results. So I'll show you the results, but maybe I should actually show you the site first so you believe that it works, and I hope it will. Let's see, let's go back here. And there we go. So there's the site. Let me go down here. So this is, you can see in the search features, we have some of the same things we had on Tesseract in terms of what feature you could search. One of the ways that we managed to combine the kind of word window and Tesseract, the different units of MQDQ and Tesseract, was that we, or James Gawley on our team, came up with a method of taking our initial Tesseract search unit, either a poetic line or a sentence, and then asking, once you've searched within that unit, if you find something, let's check the next unit and see if there's something there, in a similar way to a kind of shingling approach. And if you do, then keep that in your results. So it's a kind of hybrid unit structure that we created when we put the two projects together. With respect to word order, so again, MQDQ ranks higher results that have where the word's order is similar than ones where the word order is different between two different passages. Tesseract did not have that capability before. So our hybrid approach here is to have basically just an on and off switch. Does it have the exact same word order? You basically can filter by ones that do or do not have the exact same word order. So we can turn that switch on and off. I'll just do one here for fun, quickly. Lemma, search neighboring units, acquire identical word order. And so this is Virgil and Catullus. And hopefully this one doesn't take too long. If it does, I'll talk about something else. There we go. So I didn't really check to see if this one does anything. It's obviously doing new things for us. But anyway, you can see that it works, and I'll show you examples in the PowerPoint of what we can do now that's different. Okay, search results. Number one, we can do whole text comparisons that give us greater precision. Now, we haven't actually tested the precision entirely, but we think that this gives us greater precision, and we have reason to believe that. I can show you a little bit, and we can, again, talk more in detail about that in the Q&A if we're interested. This is just a slide showing you how MQDQ presents its results. You're only getting the very top of the web page here, but MQDQ gives you, we're searching Virgil's Aeneid against the Pharsalia or Civil War of Lucan. Lucan's an epic poet who writes after Virgil. Here's an MQDQ search. If you turn on their filter that says, where is that filter? Well, they have one here somewhere that says, show all results. And then we get to, show the most significant results. I think I might have switched those. But anyway, you can see how they present their results. You get one line of one of the texts against multiple lines of the other text. Tesserae tends to instead give you all, you know, sort of the whole two whole texts compared in a long list. So my argument for precision isn't very precise right here, but basically, if you look at that tiny little number there, which you can't read, it's the existing Tesserae search with its regular parameters for this particular search gives you 2,146 results. And if we add in the level of precision offered by adding the MQDQ search dimensions, we have cut that in half. So that's a preliminary indication, basically, that we're getting greater precision, but we need to actually test that out a little more. Our experience suggests that it is more precise. There's also the possibility that we can get greater recall. Because again, the Tesserae search usually allows you only one unit at a time, a line or a sentence. And what that has meant in the past is that if a parallel crosses a sentence boundary, say, Tesserae doesn't catch it. But now with the possibility, this kind of word window idea taken from MQDQ of grabbing another line or another sentence, we can actually cross that sentence boundary or that line boundary. And that means we should be getting more results. And again, this is probably too small for you to read, but you can see maybe there's a question mark there, and that ordinarily would have broken up this match from what follows on these two lines, but now it's capturing both of them together. Let's see. Paolo, do you want to speak about these examples that you have developed?
No, we have time enough.
Let's see, how much time do we have? Yes. Okay. Please, take that.
Some examples. This one compared Propertius with a Latin elegiac writer of the Augustan era. It dies 15 before Christ. Who, in his third book of Elegies, this pentameters, flare nec aonium tingere Marte nepus. You can understand the single words, perhaps, flare, yes. Nec aonium. Aonium is a rare adjective for what concerned the muses, tingere Marte nemus. These words have some meanings, but as you see, Ausonius, who writes 4 centuries later, has in mind these pentameters, but no one single word is represented in the riprese. Cum vis Arcadicum fingere marce pecus. The only common thing is that Propertius and Ausonius are speaking of literature. In the first example, we are in a typical situation of recusatio. Propertius doesn't want to write noble epic poetry, and so it does the what? Come si dice tingere in English? Tint nemus aonium, the wood of the muses, with Marte. Marte is a metonym for war. Ausonius is speaking of a bad poet who can't write well. Epic or Elegy or Eclogue, and so cum vis Arcadicum, Arcadium is of Arcadia, that is pastorale.
Pastoral.
Fingere, the fictio, pecus.
Herd or sheep?
Marce, vocative of Marcus. You understand that nothing have correspondence, but only the sound. It is clear that Ausonius doesn't mind voluntariamente, yes, his model, as is this model in mind, only the sounds. I have a lot of examples like this, but we have no time. Take care. No comment, neither of Propers, neither of Ozone, this connection. It is impossible to make a connection. It is impossible. Only this machine can detect these homologies. The same Propertius. These examples come from the fact that on June I had to make a conference at Assisi, the city of birth of Propertius, and so I treated the of Propertius, and I tested my texts on our machine. Propertius et Veneris, it's a couplet, hexameter and pentameter, Disticus elegiacus, et veneris domine volucres mea turba columbe, tingunt gorgoneo punica rostra lacu. Et veneris domine volucres mea turba columbe, tingunt gorgoneo punica rostra lacu. You see, Propertius dies in 15 before Christ. Ovidius is a contemporary, but a bit younger. He dies 17 anno domini. You see, the younger elegist has fatto pezzi.
Cut up into pieces.
Yeah, the hexameter, and you see that. In his Ars Amatoria and in his Amores, has reused this single tessere in a way that no one could appreciate. But he had in his mind the single tessere, in his mind. You see, tu veneri domine, assivana ferunt, volucres mea turba columbe. And pay attention to the pentameters, tingunt gorgoneo, tincta gerenso rubro, punica rostra crocò, punica rostra lacu. The punica rostra means the part of the Roman Forum where they served the rostri of Punic ships, the first Punic War, yes. And you have no other examples of the words Punica rostra in any text in Latin, only here. The last example, if you have time. The same two authors. You see, we have a reuse of spectare triumphos, spectare puella, cumque docum titulis opida capta leget, incipiem titulis opida capta legam. It's the same words. The same words. The last, the very very last, si dice. this is a strange case because, you know, Ennius was the father of Latin literature. Ennius was for the Latins what for Italians is Dante Alighieri. But at the end of antiquity, all the works of Ennius and the Annales of Ennius, the most important poem, national poem before Virgil's Aeneid, was lost. And we cannot read the Annales, but we can read only bit more than 600 hexameters. Well, as we can read these hexameters by indirect tradition, other authors later remind and rewrite the text of Ennius. In some cases, si dice, yes. We have an prose author that says, "Auctor belli Hispaniensis." Bellum Hispaniensis is part of the so-called Corpus Caesarianum. It's a continuation of the commentaries by Caesars. The Auctor belli Hispaniensis right, hic ut Aetenius, and now a quotation, a precisus quotation, pede pes premitur armis teruntur arma. It's a battle corpo a corpo, come si dice?
Face to face?
Face to face. Pede pes, foot against foot. Armis teruntur, si sfregano le armi. Pay attention. Scholars, Phalen, who edited Ennius Annales the last two centuries, combined different form of the hexameters. Because the word pede pes premitur armis teruntur arma cannot form a correct hexameter. So, Scutch, 1984, is the most important editor of Annales, Oxford, 1985, gave this form, hic premitur pede pes atque armis arma teruntur. It's a well form. But Ovidius, Scutch, neither Scutch, neither other philologists know that Ovidius in Metamorphosis, speaking of the judicium, armorium judicium, speaking of other things, other matter, right? Bella movet clipeus deque armis arma feruntur, atque armis arma teruntur. Teruntur and feruntur have nothing in common. Feruntur means are brought, teruntur,
smashed.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Excellent.
Nothing more for me.
Thank you, Paolo. So if we have just a couple minutes left, I want to Thank you. All right, excellent. That should be just enough. Talk about a couple of other features of the... Now that Paulo has given some examples of how we can actually use the Tesfaye Musiwe tool productively for some of his scholarship, I'll give you a couple more examples of what this tool can do that's different from what we had before. Pretty simply, we can take Tesfaye style search and apply it to the larger poetic corpus of MQDQ. So, for example, this is going to be too tiny to read, but if we look at, I'll show you a larger version in a second. Varro of Attax was a predecessor of Virgil who wrote an Argonautica, among other things, about 70 years before the publication of the Aeneid. And so the question we might ask is, does Varro's, which was a famous poem in its time but is all but lost to us except for fragments, so we can ask whether Varro's Argonautica influenced, or any of his poetry actually influenced Virgil's, actually I'm looking at the Georgics here, or influenced Virgil's work. Now we can, let's see, I think that might be the largest version I have. And we can see clearly, because the Tesfaye corpus before and the Perseus corpus doesn't include Varro of Attax, so now we can actually do these Tesfaye style searches between Virgil's Georgics and Varro, and you see, sort of unsurprisingly, in the first two lines, or first three, matches, we see almost exact quotations of Virgil. Virgil using almost exact quotations of Varro. These are unsurprising because we actually get the Varro from a commentary on Virgil, right? So that's why it's in the corpus in the first place. So yeah, of course, we found those. But then if we look at the next three, we find slightly more, slightly less obvious, let's say, parallels, if you can see those. But anyway, you'll just see there are a couple words in there which are suggestive of Virgil's reuse of Varro. So that's a new capability that we didn't have before, to search that way. So the last two things I want to talk about, I mentioned at the beginning, we have these new capabilities on this new site that does something that MQDQ and Tesfaye did not do before, but leverages the expertise of both teams and the tools we've already created. That's good. What's even better is if we can bring these tools out to a larger audience. And one of the things we wanted to do in this project was not only create a new tool, which was important, and merge our capabilities, but also think about how we can all work together better on this problem of intertextuality. Starting with us as classicists, and we have our own, you know, biases and ways we tend to look at things, but at least from that starting point, how can we start to work, create a sort of community or an ecosystem of ways of working on intertextuality that can be at least be used by all classicists working in the area, and hopefully people in other fields as well. So the first thing we wanted to do was to create an API that basically allows people to run queries against the Tesfaye Musiwe site. So not only do you have a front-end web that you can go to as a user and visit, but we also have an API that you can have your machine run queries against. So if I can bring that up, that interface, what we did for the purposes. Actually, I'll show you more in a minute about the details of the API, but what we did for the purposes of this presentation was just to create kind of a separate from the Tesfaye Musiwe front end, a very dumb dummy API front end. If I can get to it here, yes. That just is meant to suggest to you that if you're anybody else, you can put in queries that look like this and get results back. So is this one going to work? Okay. Should I try, James? Not Ambrose.
Just start typing Fragmenta, okay. Because you really want the short one, and then you can just choose.
The other Fragmenta will work
as
well.
Yeah, any other Fragmenta. I mean, this isn't going to be a search with a lot of scholarly validity, but what happened here, should I just...
Yeah, go ahead. So we got not much time, so make it concise. Right.
So imagine you're a digital library, and you're showing these texts. You happen to be showing Hilary of Poitiers' fragment, and for some reason, your user wants to know whether she ever quotes the Fragmenta of Seneca the Elder. You have problems with crazy users making weird searches, but the bottom line is that your website can generate this string of code, and it is a string of code that can be sent to our server, and our server will understand the request, perform the search, and send the results.
That works.
So... yeah, a little bit of a live fire exercise, but what your server will get back is this computer code, which you're not supposed to be able to read because you're not actually a machine, but these are JSON objects that describe locisimiles, essentially. The kinds of things that Paolo was showing, that Neil was showing, are returned in a language that's machine actionable for other JSON websites.
Thank you. So so you have the API that people can use that makes hopefully this resource, you know, connectable to other resources. We are in some discussions with some other partners who are actually building kind of web editing environments and want to have a suite of tools on the side of their web editing interface. And we're in discussions with them about using this kind of API. So they can, you can have a user, I'm editing my text, I see, you know, I'm doing, you know, looking at the beginning of Virgil's Aeneid, and I want to know where else does he quote Ovid or whatever. Give me a little pop-up window so I can press one button, get the first 10 citations, and then hopefully integrate those into my editing environment, and then I'm on my way with my article or my commentary or whatever I might be. So that's the vision of where the kind of API goes. And I know I'm out of time, so I'll finish here with discussion. Okay, we've got the API. We kind of know what that does. We can talk more detail about that. The final thing we wanted to work on was this idea of a standard intertext object, which James has come up with. And this is basically, can we think of a standard way of describing something digitally, which is an intertext? In other words, something in text A, or maybe text A and text B, or maybe it's text A and text A. It could be an intratext, whatever it is. Two different loci, and you know, first of all, they're connected. We need a place to a way to refer to each of those loci, those spots. And then we need to say, they're connected, and B, something about the quality of the connection. Where did it come from? What source did it come from? So here we have the elements that we've included. The basis of this standard intertext object should be a pair of canonical loci, the entity, the source that produced it, so in Tesserae, MQDQ, TM, our new website, whatever. What tokens were matched, so the things that were matched between the two. What is the original text of each unit, apart from or including the matched pieces, and then a list of strings that are showing which words are used to generate the score. So we have a scoring system, so which words are used to generate that. This is an example of standard intertext object looks like along that format. And this is the way that they are. This is the way they're sent and received through the API, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Can I have 30
seconds? Or? Yes. Just keep it to 30. We're good.
All right. The bottom line here is that all of the intertextual projects that we've seen today and yesterday are using different techniques for trying to line up different parts of texts. So the goal in this project was to try to find a way to layer those discoveries on top of each other so that they're interoperable. So, you know, if I want to use someone else's tool and compare it to the results of my tool, it's actually kind of a difficult problem. And what it boils down to is that there is a standardized way of divvying up these texts, right? These loci are, you know, they go book, chapter, line, right? That's not necessarily the way you're processing your text. It's how Tesserae used to process its text. But this new project uses more like something a little similar, a little more like a sliding window that MQDQ used. What we basically are arguing is, if you always take your discoveries and link them back to these universally already accepted divisions of the text, then you get an anchor point that you can use to coordinate the results of different internet searches, different digital tools, and you can use it to coordinate the existing scholarly commentaries, because the scholarly commentaries use the same standard loci system. I mean, that's the reason we're calling them standard. The digital version, can you put the... So what this digital version does is it basically just tries to take advantage of the existing equivalent digital standards. You know, if the loci system is the publishing standard, then, you know, a RESTful API is the standard for machines talking to each other. This kind of JSON object structure is the standard for linked data. And these addresses, this gobbledygook that starts with URNCTS, that's basically an existing published standard for how to convert the loci in the text to a resource that the machine can understand. And this actually contains a lot of information. It tells you basically the area of world literature that you're looking at, the system that you're using, the collection that originally published the author, the original publication of the text, any additional information, like this is an edited edition from Tesfaye Muzayiwe, that would be included. Then you have the book, location, and then the specific word. And the point is, this can get specific down to the individual letter, or it can be as broad as whatever, a slice of one text to another. Basically, any way you can divvy up a text, you can divvy up in this system, and the machine will understand what you mean.
Thank you. That's Thank you, James. And just to close that out, what we can imagine doing with those standard internet text objects is, you know, creating libraries of them, comparing, you know, creates a lot of possibilities for search and comparison and testing. Tesfaye Muzayiwe, what are our dissemination plans? We're planning some articles specifically on the standard internet text object that James just described. The project as a whole, a DH submission, hopefully, if the deadline's coming up quickly, and some Twitter dissemination. And finally, we want to thank, once again, FMSH, the Mellon Foundation, for supporting what has been, for us at least, an extremely fruitful and pleasurable collaboration. So thank you very much.
And it appears we have time for one extremely brief question presented either in interpretational dance or in mime. So those are the parameters of the question. It cannot be into JSON. No, it doesn't interoperate with...
Why do you include this?
Oh, we've got to get you a microphone.
If you have the identifiers of the CTS included, why do you include the text itself?
That is actually a really good question. It's not necessarily... okay, so the standard intertest object starts with three basic parameters but can be expanded. So there are three things that you want to look for, and they're the two CTS URNs and the entity that created the connection. The text itself is in there. There isn't any specific need for it. So a standard object would include less information than this. It really depends on your use case and what you want. I mean, this is really just a conversion of the search results that we produce to the standard format. If I were designing a system and I had my own version of the text, I would want to compare I would want to look at the actual string. You know what I mean? Like if I were a library and I were showing the text and I had my edition of it and I sent a query, I would probably want to verify that the string was the same, but maybe I wouldn't. And if I don't care to verify, I would just ignore that part of the JSON object. That's the best answer I have.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much. And we now move on to our next presentation.